and welcome to the Stretch Podcast. My name is Lebukule, your host. My guests and I will be having conversations on matters of self-development, emotional well-being, spiritual growth, and overall transformation. These are guests whose work, expertise, knowledge, and wisdom has inspired and moved me tremendously, and I hope that they inspire and move you too. Here is another episode of the Stretch Podcast. Before the episode, just a note to say, if you're hearing this, it means you are not on the subscriber base of the Stretch Podcast, which means you will only be getting half an episode. We do not run adverts on this podcast. We do not claim to. Our income is directly from our subscriber base. We would love for you to join the subscriber base if you love and value what we do here. The subscription is 99 rands. You will get the link to subscribe on the show notes at the bottom or on all of my social media links on the bio. Until then, enjoy this episode and I will see you hopefully soon on the other side.
Hey, dumelang guys, it is I, Lebukule, your host, with another episode of the Stretch Podcast. And today I am in conversation with Luyanda Jafta on the backstory of the People's Fund. Now, the People's Fund has one of the most inspirational, most empowering story of what it actually means to be the change you want to see in the world. It is also talking directly to this slogan, which also, you know, happens to be a political name, political party name, but the slogan itself is quite critical here, which is economic freedom in our lifetime. And the People's Fund talks to something like that. It really, really directly impacts that economic freedom in our lifetime. They are literally participating and walking that talk. So that's what makes this conversation so inspirational. But more than that, you know, Luyanda is, I don't know if I've ever described a guest as cool. You know, Luyanda is one of the coolest guests I've ever had. And that comes through, you'll hear it. He's cool to talk to, he's nerdy, he's a rebel. So he's like, you know, that mad scientist. If you could just have a picture of those geniuses who are mad, but also deep, also spiritual, a bit crazy, a bit OCD, but in the best way. So Luyanda is that type of person, you know, and you will pick it up if, like me, you are an observer and a keen listener of people. All that comes through. So the first part of the conversation, which takes a good 20 to 25 minutes, we talk about who he is. How is it that he's a co-founder of something so magnificent and so significant in our time as the People's Fund? So he takes us through that backstory. So the first part of the conversation, it's almost a profile. It's a heart-to-heart, and his spiritual views come through. His path comes through. I truly believe that Luyanda had a mystical experience during his depressive period. He was depressed at some point, and I'm saying this openly because it's something he shares in the conversation. And I mean, the way we dance in the conversation, I mean, he brings about that part of me. So what I've come to understand about doing conversations with guests is that each guest brings out that part of me that they are. In other words, because Luyanda is nerdy, spiritual, deep, broad, rebellious, all those aspects of me also comes through. So you will hear that. And you will hear, I remember one of the, I recently got a text from one of the listeners commenting on my conversations with Lebohang Masango about soft lives. And she's like, you know, I can't believe you are not academic, because in your conversation with Lebohang, you sounded like a professor in a way, the questions you were talking, your additions to the conversation. So that's all it is, really. All the guests bring out of me that aspect that they are. So in a way, I'm a mirror, sort of, or I'm a space as well. And that's also how Luyanda is. So our conversation is very orgasmic. And I mean orgasmic in a true sense of what orgasm is, not in the gutter one. So get your heads out of the gutter. It's very, very orgasmic. It's very beautiful and very empowering as well. And he's a great storyteller. And you love his story. And you'll understand what it actually takes, guys. What it takes to be an entrepreneur in this country. What it takes to be Black and to enter the economic space, and not just in Jay, in the peripheries, in the heart of it all, in the financial sector, because the People's Fund is playing in the financial sector of it all. Okay, now that's the kind of person I have, that's the kind of guest I have, and how I met Luyanda was through Tsoga Africa, through a friend of mine who will also be a guest on the podcast, Dr. Zix Mutene. And Luyanda did attend my book launch at Wits, my second book launch. He actually was one of the people who came through to attend my book launch. And we've been sort of friendly ever since, but not too close. And, you know, as you know, I have, I'm part of Fallpick. So Fallpick has been in talks and non-ending talks with the People's Fund, and we wanted to do something with them, and then we missed a big opportunity. But you know, it's again, opportunities are like buses. Another one is gonna come through, and through their campaign of raising 200 million, I'm sure Fallpick is going to get in there somehow. I'm sure. Hey, hint, hint, Zolani, hint, hint, Letia, if you're listening, those are my board members at Fallpick. So that's my guest today. Now, before I give you the conversation, I just want to say to you that this is the last episode for the term. I'm going to take 2 weeks leave off the podcast. So, you know, when you wear many hats and you do many active work, because the podcast is an active job, coaching notes are active job, coaching people one-on-one is also active, writing newsletter is also quite active. So I take leaves from different aspects at different times so that I'm not too overwhelmed. I was overseas and the podcast kept going because we had set it up that way, so that when I come back, I can then take leave from the podcast and then, you know, do other things. I'm off for you, but, you know, there's some conversations I've recorded already, which will return. When are we returning? When are we returning, Amanda? We'll return in 2 weeks. I just can't find my calendar right now. So this is the last episode. I'm just looking at my calendar. So you're not going to get the 1st of October. You're not going to get the 8th of October. We are back on the 15th. Of October, and then we will go on until December something. Basically, before the 16th, you know, from the 16th of December, South Africa literally shuts down. So we're going to shut down with it. So I'm taking 2 weeks with Nkoka Mandla and just do the final guests for the year, because the year is going pretty fast. Now I'm going to read Luyanda's bio very quickly, which I'm happy because it's quite short. He sent us a longer one, but you can get that on their website. We've also put his details there, his contact details, and their website. So this is just a short paragraph, which is the ones that I love. Luyanda Jafta is a co-founder and CEO of the People's Fund, TPF, a crowdfunding platform disrupting the business financing landscape in South Africa by allowing everyday people to invest in small businesses and receive a return. That is the essence of what the People's Fund is. And it's not just the People's Fund's essence, it's also Luyanda's essence. That comes through in how passionate he is about this organization. And the conversation we talk about, I mean, I've just already told you that the first part of the conversation is about him, his story, his entrepreneurial journey, who he is, what shaped him, why is he the person that he is. And then the rest of the conversation is about the People's Fund, how they, the origins, the current, and the future. And I mean, mixed up with that, it's other deeper conversations. We quote scripture, he quotes the Bible, we talk about numbers, we come back to maths, we flirt a little bit, innocent flirting. I mean, you know me. We laugh a lot. I mean, he makes me laugh so much that I'm glad that when a guest speaks, I go on mute. Otherwise, you'd just be hearing me kiki the entire time. So he's a bit of a rebel. He's a funny guy. He could have easily also been a comedian if he wanted to. And a very, very broad mind and very, very cool. I hope that this conversation is going to be one of those that get you to finally subscribe to listen to the entire conversation, to listen to all the other episodes as well. Which then brings me, before I give you the conversation, brings me to something else. A, thank you for subscribing. Quite a few of you are now subscribing. Thank you so much. You have no idea how much this means to me and my little team. It makes the world of difference. It might be 99 rands for you. It makes a big difference to us. Now, there's always like a challenge when people subscribe, because for some reason, people think when they subscribe, they will automatically hear the rest of the conversation on whatever platform. Let's say you're listening on Spotify or you're listening on Apple Podcast or Google Podcast. So people think then they subscribe and then they go back to that episode and thinking they'll hear the rest of it. That's not how it works. When you subscribe, you know you are subscribing on a different platform, right? When you get the receipt in your email, so it's important for you to put the right email. Because the receipt or that invoice that you get that says you have now subscribed, at the bottom, it will say, listen to episodes here. There's a tab. It's very, very visible. And it's black and bold letters that says, listen to full episodes here. You click on that and you just simply follow the instructions. So it will not be on Spotify, the full episode. It will not be on Podbean, the full episode. I don't have, or they don't have that mechanism yet. Or they do, I just cannot afford that mechanism as yet, where you get full episode on that platform directly. Are you with me? So yes, it's a bit of a schlep. It takes a little bit of patience. But once you have downloaded Gumroad and you have paid your subscription, it's really, really easy. So what I always recommend is download the Gumroad app first, and then, or subscribe and then download the Gumroad app, and then make sure that it's in your library. What will then happen is that every time a new podcast episode pops up, or we upload a new episode, you won't even have to come to Podbean or Spotify. Your phone will notify you the same way that WhatsApp notifies you, Facebook notifies you. You'll get a notification that there's a new episode at Stretch. And you listen there. The quality is amazing. You get full episodes. You get bonus episodes. You get coaching notes sometimes when I'm very generous. There's a lot more for your 99 rands than just the rest of Luyanda Jafta's episode. Okay, so thank you for subscribing, and I hope more of you will do so. And I will see you in 2 weeks on the 15th of October. For now, please enjoy this episode with Luyanda Jafta on the story of the People's Fund. Okay, hi, Luyanda Jafta is on the Stretch podcast. Finally, we are here. Yes, I've been wanting to invite you for a while, but I was intimidated. You know, people like you who are smart always, and who are sort of academic and intellectuals and also very black conscious, you intimidate me so much. So welcome to the Stretch podcast.
No, thank you.
So how are you doing? I mean, we are starting today and we were hit with stage six after the rugby. And I realized that you said, Basnikeze ichance for the rugby. And I was saying to you, but why do they always do that? and you said their priorities are wrong. What's happening with our leadership, you know, before we even get into our thing?
Got you. So firstly, thanks for having me. And I don't know why I intimidate you. You got such a big platform, such a big mind. But I don't know what I can say about the leadership, because young Bora will have no load shedding for things like rugby. Like rugby it's a sport, a South African sport. We play it. It's pretty important for the morale of the country, right? And bringing us together. But it is not the driving force, loosely, for us to be in a good place. And there feels like there's a misprioritization of our objectives, you know, having a low level of load shedding to watch the rugby so that when the economy opens again, we have high levels of load shedding. Looks like we're confused.
Right. Yeah, no, our priorities are completely off. I sometimes find that they would have no load shedding or very low stages of load shedding when it's random public holidays. And I'm saying them random because we have way too many of them. And it just always just baffles my mind. Or on your weekend. But on economic days, we are on stage six, like it's stage six now. And I don't know what a person is supposed to do when you are off from 2 to 6. So basically, Veluchai say once.
Veluchai. Veluchai. It's become untenable to run businesses, right? Even our landlords are suffering. So we're lucky our landlord has, I'm a generator, right? Because we're in a shared open workspace. We've got a dedicated office, but we share with a bunch of other tenants, right? So we've got a generator. So we don't have downtime. But the thing is, they're struggling to stay afloat as a business because the cost of diesel is about to put them out of business. You know what I mean? So in the same vein, it's you know, like, I don't know how generation works in its absolute sense, right? So I'm not going to speak technically about Eskom from a generation perspective. But it does feel like we have our priorities set wrong, like you were saying, right? When on the weekend, you know, I'd much rather on weekends to have almost no
aid.
Right? So for the weekend. So but Monday to Friday, can we have like a functional level of electricity while we're fixing the long-term problem of the generation problem, right? While we're fixing the maintenance problem.
Anyway, you and I can talk about that only, and we are not here for that. So maybe let's begin with who you are. A lot of people who follow me who understand that I also dabble in investments and Stokvel side will know of the People's Fund and will know of who you are. But for those that don't, abasalele, because I really also want to talk about Black people and the economy. Who is Luyanda Jafta, and why is it that you are ahead of the People's Fund? How did you get here?
Gotcha. Luyanda Jafta Makangane, just a rebel who just didn't understand why the world works the way it does, right? So I was lucky. For whatever reason, we call it serendipity, call it grace, right? I stumbled upon a calculator when I was 3 years old. My mother was a finance and insurance manager. My dad was also in investments, right? So there was calculators and newspapers around the house from a very young age. It's funny, they were actually part of an organization called Azapo, which was born from a party, the Black Consciousness Movement, BCM, which was born from Steve Biko, right? So that whole lineage of Black Consciousness. So when they, as they would describe it, when they realized that the party that was going to be in power was going to not do the things, let's use the word, sell out the objectives of the Black Consciousness Movement, they moved into commercial entities. So they headed up various organizations. Like my dad ended up heading up an investment wing of a bunch of unions. My mother went into finance and insurance management for vehicle sales and that sort of thing. So there were always calculators around the house, right? In some form or another.
I'm really interested in that one. Okay, continue.
Now, calculators, this is 1991, give or take, because I was born in 88. I'm a spring chicken, even though nothing in Dal. And yeah, Papa, nothing in Dal. And
no, Papa, nothing in Dal. 88. Oh my God, like I'm 100 years older than you.
What year were you born? Or do we not ask that?
No, you do. I was born 76.
76, so you're 12 years old.
Yeah, although you do look older than me, especially now.
Wow. Anyway, I find the calculator and I start playing with it. And I figure out everything that works in the calculator from addition, subtraction to multiplication, completely just from playing with it, right? And then I couldn't figure out division, so I had to wait for school to go figure out division. Now, you're 3 years old. By the time I'm five, I know how the whole calculator works. So I'm excited to go to school, but only to go to school so I can learn division. And then you only learn that you're only going to get to division in grade four. So what started was my journey of being bored in school from grade one, right?
Oh, my God. I'm killing myself here. That's why I'm on mute.
So from grade one to grade four, I'm bored in school. I'm ahead of the class for the thing I'm interested in. All the other stuff becomes easier once you understand mathematics, because mathematics feels like the language of the universe, right? Or rather the manifestation of the language of the universe, because ultimately the language of the universe is love, you know? And mathematics feels like it maps it. So I'm bored. As I'm bored, I become a problem child. I'm always fascinated by things that have nothing to do with a normal status quo. And that carries on all the way through my high school life, all the way through varsity. Funny story, I failed through varsity like nonstop. I was supposed to be doing an economic science degree majoring in maths major,
yeah,
and applied mathematics. And I used to spend a lot of my time in the psychology class, which was not a subject I was taking, the politics class, the sociology class. Also, the girls were prettier in those classes. No offense to the girls that were in my maths classes. But it was the fourth year I was in varsity, but it's a second year class for economics. I was reading the textbook. And then while reading the textbook, I was like, oh man, this is how Forex works, right? As an example, right? I went and traded Forex in my varsity year, right? Made a bit of money, what? Right?
You were one of those. Oh my word. You were that group. I think you were the first people to trade in that era. Yeah.
Yes. Like I got a text number and then I went to trading account with Standard Bank. And I looked at like world events that were happening at the time. And then I predicted the currency pairings, how they would work for the next, I think it was the next 2 weeks, based on the news that were coming out, right? So I put some money in. I made some money. I was writing that exam a few weeks later. I made money, né? I failed that exam. I was like, man, like this school thing, I don't think it works for me. Like, how am I failing an exam from a subject matter that I just made money in the real world from, right?
Wow. Yeah.
And that's when, I think that's the first time the penny dropped, is that the world is constructed in theory, but it exists in practice, right? Oh. And all of this theory we have in the world is wrong because it's not telling the truth. So then began the pursuit of truth, right? Also, my rebellious nature, it allowed that. So I dropped out of varsity that year. I think I got excluded eventually. I was at Wits. They were like, no. You passed just enough to stay in the school so that you can have fun. I think I spent...
So that you can go to sociology classes and social anthropology classes.
You know this. I think in 4 years of varsity, 4 years of varsity. Now, let me give context. In a week of varsity, you're going to about 20 classes. Né? Like that's the classes that are designated to you. In 4 years of varsity, I think I went to 60 classes in total, like where I was sitting down and I actually attended the class.
No
I'm serious. What I used to do is towards the end of the year or close to exams, I'd sit with the textbook and try to study it like in 2 or 3 days. So depending on how badly I procrastinate or how bad lazy I get, I'd fail the subject. If I gave myself time for a week, I'd understand it and I'd write the exam and pass just enough, you know? So so it was the rebellious spirit. So there was the laziness and procrastination. So, and I think the rebellion came from the lack of truth, you know, in the world. And then my pursuit of truth began. Now, you can imagine I've got a scientific leaning. So from a very young age, and I've got liberation struggle parents who are, they're quite liberal with their views, right? They're quite open. And at the time, the enemy of the liberation movement at the time, was anything that could be associated with whiteness. So the schools they sent us to, obviously, we started learning Christianity, like from a young age. But at 12, I think I rejected it. And I was atheist for 15 years of my life, right? Like pure atheist, right? With no interest in any sort of higher power or anything. And that it was backed up by my scientific perspective. Then life hits you. You know, I used to make some very insulting comments to my friends who were Christian, like through varsity. I'd say things like, "Mama Kali, but you know, the thing is, my strength comes from God." And, oh, Kali, lengale imaginary friend, yako. As I'm so saying, you know?
Oh, but Hong Luyanda.
Go ahead.
No, I actually just wanted to reflect on some of the things you've said, because you've said quite a bit, and I can see I love the type of person you are. You're easy to interview because you are so broad. So firstly, I love that today it's the 12th of September as we're having this conversation, and it's the commemoration of Steve Biko. And we are talking about these issues that I think he sort of stood for. I didn't know that you come from an Azapo leaning. So it's just so apt that you canceled on the 5th only to come today, which is Biko's day. So I love that. I also wanted to speak on something that's so profound that you said, that life, we are taught life in theory, while life is real. And I want to share a personal story. I mean, I never went to varsity. I didn't even get there. It didn't interest me at all. Because I thought Uguti varsity was about being a doctor, a lawyer, a nurse, and I think a police, I don't know, I had five things in my head because that's what we were taught. And I was not interested in any of that. And I remember even saying to myself, I'll find a way. I know which I'll find a way. You know, I started the job market quite early, in my 7s, so I didn't go that route. Yeah. What do you think of the future of universities? Let's just say in 2045, do you think they still will be existing, if at all?
So there's two parts to university for me, right? There's the social development aspect, there's the coursework, right? So the part I'm talking about being very theoretical is the coursework. Nah? There is something, though, to be given to the social development and the networks developed from it, right? Because I was a boy from Benoni, a small town, Zongwema Plaza. You come to Joburg, that's the first my experience of Joburg is university. You're seeing 18-year-olds drive around in Nissan GTRs, right? Like, even if the objective is not to become so ridiculously rich that you've got that sort of opulence for your kids, there is an expansion of the mind that happens. I mean, I was like, man, I just want to get a job, pays me 20,000 rand a month, and get a white picket fence. We're done, right? Like, I'm a high school student. That's my concept of the world, right? So I do think there's a social development and an opening up of the world that happens at varsity. And first, also varsity was the first place I interacted truly with the internet. Yo, I was so happy. I was like, wow, there's something like this where I can find the information I need to for all things, you know? So what does the university look like? Coursework-wise, I think we're going to move to more and more free platforms, but we're still going to need some place of development, right? Or social development, like a watering hole of young adults, right? Because that energy, I do think we don't know how each person's path is supposed to go, né? But I do think that 18 to about 21, 22, right? As an exploratory period is highly important, you know, because you have no idea who you are. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I get it. We can go through all sorts of rabbit holes because I wanted to talk about maths, but maybe another time because sure. You spoke of how if you understand maths, you'll understand basically everything and that maths is the language of the universe. I completely agree. It will be a podcast for another day because I'm into numbers as well. Okay, so let's put a pin on that and move on to... before we get into the People's Fund, because I want to spend a lot of time there, I want to hear your thoughts on Black people and entrepreneurship. You know, the People's Fund funds a lot of entrepreneurs. I want to understand if we are growing, is there a bigger pool, or we could do better? What's happening in the psyche of a Black person when it comes to entrepreneurship?
Got you. So... I like to tell things in example stories, right? So it's nice. It follows on from the way we ended off, where I'm leaving varsity, I'm starting my first business, right? I get into entrepreneurship. This is 2012. I started an influencer marketing company before the word influencer marketing exists, right? It's called Paybook. And basically, we pay people how to tweet, right? So we get advertising spend from insurance companies, various things. Mr. Price was one of the customers we had on our platform, as an example, right? And we'd get people to tweet and then we'd pay them. Over 3 years, we built that platform to be quite sizable, 2015. Now, 2012, barely anyone is on social media. 2015, the word influencer marketing still doesn't exist, right? But when I get to the 2015 period, this is the first business I've made successful. I come from a hometown where everyone said, you're smart, you're going to be a success. But I failed in varsity, and that was an example of being scared of building something of substance, right? Or failing at anything, right? We finally built something of success, and the immediate thing that hits me is depression. Boom. You know, like when it's bad, right? And it makes no sense because now you've achieved the goal. And I remember J. Cole had just released Forest Hill Drive not so long, 2014 Forest Hill Drive. And the song that hit me was No Such Thing as a Life That's Better Than Yours, né? And there's this line he says, the good news is you came a long way. The bad news is you came the wrong way, right? And
wow, nice. Yeah. I like that line. You came a long way, but the bad news is you came the wrong way. It's that ladder thing, you know, the ladder it's on the wrong wall.
100%. Yeah. And the depression was coming from a place of, man, are you going to spend the rest of your life making insurance companies bigger? Like, this thing lacks so much meaning, purpose, like from a deep place, right? You've learned now that you can scale a business. What are you going to do with your life, you know? And things that looked important to me were, at the highest level, is the existential crisis of mankind. So I wanted to get into energy, right? But at the time, in my immediate surroundings, Fizu Must Fall was happening. My deeply feminist view, plus I'm a young adult, you know, so I've got a deeply feminist view and all of that, is that, man, intersectional feminism, we need to get everyone up so that we could fight the same battle, right? At the time, my views have changed quite significantly since then, but they still hold the same justice, but we'll discuss that, right?
Yes, we'll discuss that, but also my feminist views have changed slightly. Yeah. And they're no longer deeply entrenched. They've moved. They've deepened in another way. We'll talk about that if there's time. Not interject.
I saw a comedian talk about this. It's a white man. He was talking on a joke, and he's like, "Yeah, I'm Republican now." And then everyone looks at him, then they go, "Oh." And he's like, "Oh, you think I woke up and I was born Republican? Thing is, you're all gonna get older. I was a Democrat. I was a raging Democrat. And somehow it just sneaks up on you how you become a Republican, you know?" And
I get it. I totally get it. Yeah.
So And at the time, when we were building Paybook, there's an older lady. She's deeply feminist, but she used to say to me, she held feminist views that were less aggressive, right? And she was friends with another girl who was more my age, was very aggressive, like with the feminist views. And then she kept on saying, "I understand, my love, but you're gonna grow older," you know, like, and it only made sense now as I'm getting older, right? So I think we're aligned in that regard. And then it's like looking for meaning, like I said in the story, looking for meaning. Then it's like, how do we get people to participate? Because we've got such a large portion of the world not participating. Like South Africa, for example, you've got this massive income inequality and it's across the race lines, you know? I think when I think about my path on this earth, and life is discovering your purpose or God, what he intends for you to do in the world. You discover it your whole life. But something of substance in that almost feels absolutely clear is that I think part of my job is to be a mechanism or part of the solution of creating systems that unlocks human potential, right? Or maximizes human potential, because I'm always drawn to seeing the maximum capacity of someone. And sometimes to people's detriment, like I have terrible relationships because of that in the past, right? Even romantic ones, because the standard I'd set is just ridiculous. Your person just wants to be a lover. And it's like, man, why are you so intense? You know what I mean? You know, and even friendships. and even friendships, right? There's this constant, and I think it's a battle with myself where I'm fearful of not realizing my own potential, right? So the battle with the self is manifest in the world where we're trying to improve people's lives, but it can tend to be a little prideful, you know. But there's very many good things that come from that, right? There's a drive to see people express their highest potential, if they are willing or if they want to, you know. Yeah. So
no, there has to be a price. I mean, the pridefulness that you speak of, it's that martyrdom that we have. Okay. So you and I, we will rescue the black people, but we will be limping and bleeding and having very bad relationships. But just wrap it up and then tell me what you think as black people and entrepreneurship. Where are we in the bigger scheme of things? Yeah.
And that's basically what led to the People's Fund, which comes to your question, is that the biggest thing we complain about as black people is lack of capital, right? Or access to markets, right? And the People's Fund was a collaborative effort amongst first almost exclusively black companies from a shareholding perspective, right? But from a capital perspective, it was almost exclusively white people from a crowdfunding perspective, right? Even though we were funding black people. So we started things like the stock fell because we realized our language was wrong, you know? When you can't say crowdfunding to black people, right? It is stock fell, don't have anything in that.
Oh, you know? My God. Yeah, it is stock fell, full stop. What is crowdfunding?
We don't know what that is. From that perspective, there is a lot of activity from black entrepreneurs' perspective, né? And I think there's something we've done an injustice to black entrepreneurs, as black entrepreneurs and also as gatekeepers of knowledge and intellect, as black people in the various spaces we operate in, either in the economy, either in government or in corporate, right? We become the biggest gatekeepers of whiteness only being the thing that passes through those doors, right? You've got a lot of entrepreneurs generally who, you know, like when you think of the black majority that is in the country, we have, if you look at like, for example, Indians or white people, they have a financial literacy level of 80 to 90%, right? Black people have a financial literacy level of about 25%, if I'm not mistaken, right? So when you talk about finance, like if I win a tender or a purchase order or something, right, and I need financing, right, most Black people are just intimidated by the financial markets, right, like in financial institutions rather, because they're going to ask for things they don't understand, right? Like finance is the only industry where the supplier, where the customer needs to qualify themselves to the supplier of the goods. You know what I mean? And fundamentally, that's what the People's Fund felt was wrong. So that's back to the question of pursuit of truth, right? Is that something is broken here. We've got a 1 trillion a year spending government. Government is buying from goods and services from corporates and government, I mean, from small businesses, right? Only 10% of that is Black-owned businesses. You know, that's another thing in Korai. This is the gatekeeping we do. We gatekeep for our own success. Is that we've got these PR narratives running that are not backed up by the facts, you know? Like we like to think of government as corrupt and what's this thing called? And Yamatenderpreneur, you know? While those things exist, we have to be conscious of the fact that most government tenders go to white-owned companies. They go to corporates, Wagu JSC, and white-owned companies. So if there's corruption, that's where the majority of the corruption is.
The majority of corruption is. I mean, government is the biggest, all over the world, the biggest consumer of goods and services, and it goes to the bidvest of the world. There are, you know, bidvest is huge, and it has many divisions. There are divisions of bidvest that just are tenderpreneurs.
Yes.
They rely only on government tenders, and we don't talk about that. But if Lebupule has a furniture business that relies on tenders, I'm not called a businesswoman, I'm not called an entrepreneur, I'm called a tenderpreneur. So something is off in our psyche, and I hope it's changing. And slowly, when you work with them directly, I'm an entrepreneur, or it's tenderpreneurs, because you guys finance some tender. You are the tenderpreneurs. So hopefully the psyche is changing, and we are going somewhere. We're going somewhere. So where is the People's Fund going? Why are you? I mean, you've sort of answered why is it that you've started it, but anything else that you want to add about the whole People's Fund and its direction?
Gotcha.
And linked to your purpose, because it's very much linked to your purpose. 100%,
100%. I mean, the organizations we're part of are always a manifestations of where we are, right, at any given time. So it's always going to be linked to our purpose. And as I've developed also in, like, loosely my spiritual journey, right, like you said, I was on Tolutik, Bengu Wilderness. And I don't know. There's a love and freedom that exists from living in the spirit under Christianity, right? Where you're liberated from the shackles that keep you down. I call them little gods, whether it be it money, be it any other addiction, right? That we live with, right? And what we want to carry into the business of the People's Fund is that same spirit, you know, where we say, man, people are bogged down, right? The thing they see is the lack of capital, but what they need more than anything truly, right, is love, right? And love, what it does is it's patient, it's got forbearance. So how do we create an environment for Black entrepreneurs to be able to get access capital, right, purchase order funding or any sort of capital in a way that speaks to them directly? It doesn't, you know, like morning revelation, your Holy Spirit, shower not direct, like with you.
Well, this is the end of the road for you. If you want to continue listening to this episode, you can subscribe to the Swag Podcast for 99 rand. The link to subscribe will be found on all the show notes at the bottom and on all of my social media handles on a link tree. It simply says subscribe to the Swag Podcast, and then you will get all the episode in full, plus bonus episodes and some of the coaching notes that I share with subscriber only. Until then, I will see you next week with another episode. Love and green lights to you.